So my name's Robert Smith. I'm one of the co-founders of Pop House Collective. Joe, Josh, and I were the three minds kind of behind it. It's kind of a fun story. We're the three that kind of brought this thing to life. You know, did a lot of elbow grease, a lot of like time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears. And here we are now. I would say in terms of like what we kind of do, I handle a lot of like the marketing and kind of helping get the word out and some of the fun in terms of like design and kind of like some creative ideation within the team.
I'm Joe Boyle. I'm one of the co-founders of Pop House Collective. Yeah, like Rob said, this is our first game. I handle a lot of the financial operations, logistics, data, parts of the team. A lot of the admin stuff goes to me too.
Yeah, and I'm Josh. I'm the resident nerd of the group. I am kind of our mechanics guy, the more strategy gamer of the three of us. So bringing that insight into, you know, how do you create a party game that, you know, strategy players love to play as well. Day to day, I also handle a lot of our just kind of external communications and copywriting and all of that fun jazz as well.
It's time for an adventure in the worlds of user experience and game design. On season three of the Design Thinking Games podcast, join old school UXers and aspiring game designers Michael Schofield, Tim Broadwater, and an array of quirky characters from pixelated heroes to mischievous NPCs in search of the ultimate player experience. Design thinking is a process that is applied to different types of games in this podcast. If you're wondering whether your favorite games have already come up, you can listen through the backlog at designthinkinggames.com. Now, Rapid Protobot, fire the design thinking laser.
Just like as humans and gamers, what is like kind of like the first like really special gaming moment you have in your memories? I worded that weird, but I think you get what I mean.
I know I have one right away. Not necessarily in board games, but in video games. I was a very avid video gamer growing up. My brother and I had just gotten the first PlayStation, and our first game ever was Final Fantasy VII on there. Lifelong Final Fantasy fan. But we were used to, you know, Sega Genesis and things like that before, so we didn't know what a memory card was. And we didn't know, my mother did not know what a memory card was. We played the first, like, dungeon battle area in Final Fantasy VII probably 35 times because we just didn't quite understand how we hadn't gotten to, like, an autosave point or, like, that the game could be that long.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've been obsessed ever since.
That's great. Josh's memory sparked a memory for me. We similarly transitioned from Sega Genesis to PlayStation as a family, and our first game was Crash Bandicoot. We got Crash Bandicoot 1 and then 2, and then we got 3, but you know, that wasn't as good as 1 and 2. And then as an adult, now that I own a Switch, like, they've re-released it onto the Switch, and they have a Crash Bandicoot 4, which is amazing. And so I'm getting this whole like nostalgia kick right now because I'm working my way through all of the games, you know, 1, 2, and 4 on Switch, and I love it.
I feel like for me, so I grew up, for like some context, I grew up with three older sisters and I was always like the younger little brother. So I feel like I grew up playing a lot of like Mousetrap, Guess Who, Dream Phone, you know what I'm saying? Like we played that, I played that. But like for me, I think like fun gaming memories is truly like I grew up in the middle of like the country and my friends and I would just like make obstacle courses in our backyards or like in the woods, and we would like run around and climb trees and like jump off of logs and collect things as if we were on like an episode of Survivor. I think it was just a lot of like creative thinking when you didn't necessarily have a lot of, you know, items or resources around you. So you just used what you could in nature and you would collect leaves and rocks and such.
I deeply and dearly remember Dream Phone, and I would love like 30 seconds on why Dream Phone is perhaps the best game of that era.
I think it was really great. I mean, I was a young, closeted little boy, and I got to play Dream Throne amongst my sisters under the facade that it was like, oh, well, like, you know, I don't know. Like, it was like a tag-along game that maybe wasn't necessarily built or marketed for me as a little boy, but, like, it was a way for me to let my hair down and maybe experience and explore some things at an age that you never would have been able to otherwise. So thank you, Dream Throne from the 80s.
Mousetrap is really great too. I love the Mousetrap. I think you're talking about the board game with all the plastic pieces you set up. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It was like a Rube Goldberg thing, right? Because
yeah,
like,
with this weird machine. Yeah. How did the three of you meet? Are friends at work, or how did this even start? You know,
I think I'm the center of this, so I'll take this one on. So Rob and I met through like mutual friends at a house party one night, and I just kind of assimilated into that group over time. Rob had tried to create a couple different games in his 10 years and like tried a couple different things and finally found something that he's really happy with that he created for a Halloween party. And so we worked. So then he was like, hey, do you want to work on this with me? And we really launched into this and created it's kind of a fun story. And Josh, who I'd known for a couple of years, who I met his husband before and then became friends with him months later, he was one of our first playtesters. And so the three of us like really just kind of came together to work on this project. And, you know, it was just like happenstance that I happened to know both of them. And, you know, this all launched out of kind of Rob's idea and was brought together from there.
So the Dervation is a Halloween party? Is that, or like a game for a Halloween party? Is that what you said?
Yeah, sure. So I can jump in and kind of add some color on this one. So basically it was like my partner Joe and I, we were getting ready to host like a kind of intimate Halloween party. It was like 14 of us in like this small one bedroom apartment in Chicago that we had at the time. And like, I wanted to make this kind of like fun interactive experience. So it started out with like 25 different like pieces of construction paper, just like taped to a wall. And it looked very like Jeopardy or like Wheel of Fortune, if you will. And so I wrote on the backs of these pieces of paper, different like probing questions or kind of get to know you cards where you would like, you know, share a different piece of your life with the group. And, you know, at the end of it, everyone felt a little bit bonded afterwards. And it was just kind of like a really cool gaming experience. Like everyone thought it was quite fun. We treated it a bit like a game show where people were like chanting and like clapping their hands. And like, I was playing this host and all of us were in Halloween costumes. I was dressed like a football player. But yeah, it was just a really fun experience. So then like me, Joe and I, we started working on this and writing a bunch of cards. And then after we had quite a few cards, like an Excel sheet, probably with like 150 prompts written, right? We started playtesting this. And at this moment, this is actually like right when the pandemic hit. So the world had just shut down. Like everybody was cooped up in their homes. And I feel like people were really craving connection at this point in time. And it was like this game really bridged that gap and offered people a chance to like, you know, even if we're just talking on our computers like we are right now, is an opportunity for everyone to get to know each other on a level that I think we all were really desperately craving at the time. And out of that first playtest, Josh was literally the first playtester in this group of like four friends.
Yeah, so I was part of the first playtest of what I like to call the game that would eventually become, it's kind of a fun story. It was a very different thing at that point in time. And so we had the first playtest. We did kind of a Q&A with Rob and Joe. And the two of them asked me to come on as someone to kind of run Q&As at future playtests. Obviously, since the world has shut down, at the time, I was a out-of-work server and actor. So all of my careers were no more. So I was like, yeah, I'm bored in my house just sitting here playing Animal Crossing like everyone else. Let me hop on and do this and help out. And after about two play tests with that Q&A, I kind of sat down with the two of them and was like, I have a lot of notes. A lot of ideas about what we can do with this. And that's kind of what morphed into me coming in more full time rather than just this kind of mediator in between the two. And really being able to put all three of our heads together have really morphed it into something special.
If you think of the three of us as like different points in a triangle, we have like this beautiful points of connection and how we support each other and how we round each other out in different spaces and ways that, like, honestly, like, I'm not a math person. I am not a mathematician. Like, I need Joe and I need Josh. I need their creative minds in ways that I could never, you know, perform in those certain spaces. So I think it is, like, quite incredible that we found each other and that we found this project, and we both, all three of us, just fell in love with it. And I think we've been able to really build something beautiful together. And I'm just, like, insanely proud of us, honestly.
What was, like, the bridge between, you know, three people craving that sense of connection, perhaps opportunistically not having a whole lot of demands on their free time, to becoming like Pop House?
Yeah, I'm curious about the name too, like the Pop House, the name and the incorporation, like what's happened since.
Sure. I think, like, for the name, what we liked about the words Pop House is, because originally we kind of wanted it to just be Pop House, and we liked the word pop being treated like a verb. It's something that's jumping at you. It's something that's very excitable. It has a lot of energy. It's coming at you, right? And we love the word house in terms of, like, it brings a sense of foundation and community and a place of shelter when you need it most. So it's like this jumping, vibrant energy, but also like the security and, I don't know, the care of community building. Like, that's kind of like the heart of what it is. And then the word collective just means that, like, we are a team, we are a trio, and the collective grows and expands as needed, in the sense of, like, if we need to bring on freelancers to help us bring certain ideas to life outside of just Josh, Joe, and I. So I feel like in all, Pop House Collective just personifies this dynamic motley crew of very creative, expressive voices. And we're, you know, the experiences that we're building that we're excited to bring to the table for everyone to enjoy.
And we talk about this a lot, but it really is true, is that, like, we are very much focused on community building, both, you know, in the game and in our lives. Even, you know, before the pandemic, we're all kind of the extroverted friends in our friends groups who are bringing people together. And really just our focus has always been, how do you take people from different backgrounds, bring them together and bond them together? That's kind of our lens of how we look at everything.
I remember when I geeking out to Mike at PAX Unplugged, and I'm like, there's these people on TikTok. They have this most amazing TikTok ever. And it's just like, it's on their game. And I've wanted to get the game. So it was kind of fortuitous. I'm glad we met. And I think there's, even in your TikToks, you have, like, some of your early ones, which kind of talk about the story of, you know, the game and everything. And at what point, is this a full-time gig for all of you? Or is this a part-time gig for all of you? Or what is it like now, I guess?
It certainly feels like a full-time job, but it's not any of our full-time jobs. We are all double-timed and just letting Jesus take the wheel.
Okay.
I mean, like, this is just like a passion project that snowballed into a big bad animal, and we're just holding on and trying to bring it to life.
Can you hear me? Good to have you back with us. I hope you don't mind that I am recording for investigative notes. It's a wax cylinder, the only thing we've found that can pick up the voices of people in your condition. My name is Owen von Sid. I am a reclaimer. Do you know what that means? No? Well, I am sorry to inform you that you didn't make it. Please try to remain calm. The worst is over. Nothing can hurt you, not ever again. But the thing that did this to you, it is still out there. That is what we do. I wake unfortunate souls, such as yourself, hear their stories. Then my associates and I see to it that whoever or whatever did this to you is dealt with. Now, let's begin. When you are ready, tell me, how did you die?
Ghost Wax is an anthology horror podcast from Far and Tall Tales Productions. New episodes releasing weekly. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, kind of what I feel is unique about the game, and I'll just give my framing on it. Party games get this horrible rap, in my opinion. But some party games are great. And one of my favorite ones is Codenames, Codewords. It's a decent one. Bank Heist is another one we've talked about on the show before as well. There seem to be more deception-based ones. But, Cards Against Humanity has blown up. And I think people understand, like, this is a serious genre. But what I like about it's kind of a fun story is there are these kind of uncomfortable questions or things that you might want to tell or just things you never knew about the people that you're playing with. And so can you is that from the Halloween because you knew the people and you were comfortable with asking those types of questions and it's kind of morphed into that? Or I'm just curious about that, if you can speak to it.
Maybe we could also dovetail into like the pitch. Like, tell us about kind of a fun, funny story.
That's
right?
Probably a better place to start.
Explain the game.
Yeah, sure. I mean, honestly, when the game started out for this Halloween party, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It was filthy. It was like absolutely like down and dirty. And let me just say, like, we were opening up and like sharing, okay? And I think like that's like where the game started, right? And it was like there were some crass questions. There were some for real, like, let's get down and know each other questions. And so I think what we started to do, like, with any work of art, like a sculpture, you got to start chipping away at this thing and you got to form it and you got to like keep going until you like land on your final piece. I do think there are fun probing questions. We like to say we have a variety of like questions that are deep and introspective and questions that deal with your adolescence or nostalgia or your future goals and aspirations. So there's a whole gambit of, you know, embarrassing, funny, deep, honest, you know, et cetera. And we like to say that it's really a choose your own adventure where you can lean in and lean out of that as much as you'd like. There's always a skip metric within the game. So if you do get a card that you're not loving, you're never forced to be in the hot seat. You can just completely move on if it's not the vibe. And there's also safety barriers built into the game, such as the nope card, where if a topic of conversation ever comes up that you're just truly not vibing with, you know, you can go ahead and hold that up and just cease conversation. It's a light reset on the round. It's not to be used competitively or strategically, just a way to ensure that everyone's enjoying themselves. But yeah, with that, I mean, boys, what else do you have to say about some of the cards and where it is and where we brought it, I suppose?
Well, so the actions are performative, right? They want you to do something. I like that. Yeah. I don't know the thing. What is the acronym? The ASMR, when you're doing the ASMR. The other thing is like explaining a story, you know, so how did you come up with the various different things maybe as well?
Sure. I guess like, so it started out and the root of the game was specifically just centered around what are called story cards. And that's where you draw a prompt from the deck and then you answer it with a story from your life, such as like, who is your arch nemesis growing up? What's your favorite memory about another player here? So you can just really start sharing different experiences from your youth or, you know, from those around the table that you're playing this game with. When the game started and it was just heavily focused on that aspect, we were kind of craving some additional layers to it. So we started adding in what we like to call these kind of like lightning round or wild cards, which is left or right, point a finger, and everybody answers. And we feel like what these add to the game is this kind of like roulette element where points are flying around the table. It's kind of a way to allow the underdog to suddenly kind of come back from the when they were trailing in points, now they can maybe be like competing and be second place or third place. So it's kind of just an opportunity to ensure that, you know, there's some quick rounds that take place within 30 seconds or less, 60 seconds or less. And then you can move on and have more kind of impactful moments where somebody kind of takes a piece of armor off, if you will, and bears a deeper moment from their life, because that experience right there is inherently going to have a little bit more weight to it than you and your friends just chuckling about who's going to plan the better group vacation or like plan the next holiday and like the different like, you know, details and aspects that come along with it. There's a lot of creative improv and exploration that comes in those cards, but where the relationship building really comes into play, I believe, is in the story cards where people are just actively sharing experiences about their lives.
I want to like maybe kind of like lean in a little bit more on like the deliberateness of this like game design, because I think even in one of your guys' videos, you know, it shows like, oh, here's Cards Against Humanity, and there's like a little finger wag, and we just mentioned Cards Against here too. But Cards Against Humanity is barely a game, right?
It's a facilitator, I feel like. It gets people...
Yeah. It lets people, like... And it serves its purpose, which is that it lets you be super politically incorrect, like, among potentially strangers, right? It helps... It serves a functional social need that's really cool. And what I like about the deliberateness about, like, your design choices there, you kind of went through it. It's like, hey, there are ways out. There are cards that control pacing, so you can probably lean in and lean out. This is kind of like some great phrasing that I'm going to assume is deliberate also.
You sound exactly like my therapist.
And then there's, of course, like, yeah, I mean, like, and there's a real game and there's real points, and you guys have tried to solve the problem of lagging behind points. There's all of these obstacles in creating like a really good game, getting the pacing right, creating moments of differed pacings. I would love to talk about how I assume you guys had all of these ethics involved with how you communicate your party planning and stuff like that, like creating safe spaces for your buddies, knowing that your buddies can be really awful with one another too in a safe space, and then how you translate that into mechanics which seem like polished.
Yeah. So that's actually, I want to give Josh a lot of the credit there, because that's where I feel a lot of these safety mechanics came in, were from his idea. His first that play tested it, a lot of them were at least mildly introverted and I think a little turned off to the first version of this process when Rob and I started playtesting it out there. And, you know, a lot of these safety metrics that, as you said, allow people to lean in and lean out came in large part, you know, from him, a little bit from groupthink and like kind of calling out and identifying the problem and then saying like, how do we solve this? And that's another thing I think the three of us really do well, is that we're all really good problem solvers. And so I think like when we're able to put our heads together, we conquer a lot of problems. And I think that Josh inherently has a lot of objectivity in certain situations, and he really brings that into the fold here, and is willing to kind of lay it on the line for us and say like, I think this is a problem, we need to address it. And then, you know, either he has a solution or we put our minds together and come up with one.
You know, as Joe was saying that, and thank you for that compliment, my friend. I'm realizing that pretty much every single safeguard that I put in this game was to figure out how I could get my partner to want to play it.
Awesome.
That's smart.
And he is introverted and has a very short attention span. Creating these safeguards of, we've talked about this a lot, being able to lean in when you want to, leaning out when you aren't necessarily feeling it, and how do you keep the pacing going so that it's not just like, all right, well, it's this person's turn to tell a story. Okay, it's this person's turn. And then being able to throw in a like, oh, great, we're all doing something. We're all engaged at the second that you think that you're not going to be engaged, kind of helps you stay into it. And you know, when we set out to make this, something that was kind of in our head a lot was this idea of you're at a party and you kind of have these different groups of people in different areas. So you have, you know, people sitting around a table playing a Cards Against Humanity, playing a Monikers, doing something like that. And then you have people in the kitchen, like gossiping or having a deep conversation, and they're just completely removed from each other. And how do you bring those two groups together so that everybody's getting what they want? And so that was a very big lens for us going through this, is just like, how do you appease the people who want to have a deep conversation and not necessarily play a game, and the people who just want to play a game but don't want to have a deep conversation, and like let them both concede a little bit but mostly get what they want? And I think that's where a lot of the safeguards and the choose your own adventure and all that comes in. And again, in this lens of like wanting to build community, we don't want to ever have a moment, and we definitely had that during playtesting, where we don't want to have a moment where someone is so shocked or uncomfortable by something that's going on in the game that they check out.
I don't want you to go into if you're not, but can you, what are you comfortable speaking to about that incident you're talking about in playtesting, or is someone not being comfortable with it, or not wanting?
Yeah, so I mean, this is, we had a card back in the day which was, I want to say, along the lines of like, who would kill their pet for $1 million, and it was a point of
holy shit.
When you compare it to stuff that's on Cards Against Humanity, that's nothing. Or yeah, Crabs Against Humanity,
right. Yeah. It's not, but you know, it's, you know, when you have these cards, and we definitely have cards in the deck that do push buttons and kind of, you know, push the limit of maybe what people are willing to talk about. But when you have something that is a point of finger card, or is, you know, giving a superlative to someone, which is like so negative of personally, you know, it's different than a Cards Against Humanity where you're just like playing a card. It doesn't represent you, but saying, pointing to your friend and saying, you're the person who I think is the cruelest, who would put down their pet for money, that isn't what we're going for. And so we're on the surface, we're making fun and light, but kind of the back end of that is like, you're really ostracizing someone. And so how do you create a superlative for someone that's light and fun and may come to the same solution, but doesn't have some sort of like cruelty or hard negativity attached to it? Because that's not what we're going for.
To an earlier point, Robert, I think that you said was like the goal is connection, right? So it's not just like party, haha, fun, but there are moments to really like connect with folks. But you know, and so you don't want to like create, you don't want to create like disassociation because everything's so dark all the time.
Yeah, I think when we were like writing this and really developing like this perfect mix of like the funny meeting the deep meeting, you know, everything in between, is I think like the perfect word that comes to mind when I think of that is balance. Like we just needed to find what the right balance and mix of all of this was. And I think it's also important to say, like, in this process, we wanted to figure out, like, with writing a lot of these prompts, there's a fine line of being like vanilla and boring or being like cringeworthy and way too far. And we wanted to straddle that in the best way possible. And I think we found that in a lot of cards that, you know, bring a lot of these funny, wild scenarios to the table, but it's done in a way that's light and playful and it doesn't come at you with your friends all waving their fingers at you in like distaste. So I think what this really like shook out to be is it creates a space where you're in on the joke, you're never the butt of the joke. And that's really what we tried to find was everybody's laughing, everybody's enjoying themselves. There are times where you're kind of like the result of why everyone's laughing, but it's not done in a way that's malicious or a way that you feel othered or that you're kind of like done with the game. Because even in writing this, we wanted to make sure that there was nothing that was ever too polarizing. And we thought through this in the sense of like socioeconomic standing, where you grew up, what your financial background was, what your demographic is, kind of different life experiences. I think a great example of that is while we were playtesting was we had a card that said something along the lines of like, describe your favorite family vacation. Why was it your favorite? At the end of the playtest, one of our playtesters told us that they grew up and they didn't have a lot of money and their family never traveled, right? So how do you make this card suddenly be flexible for somebody that might not have had a similar growing up experience as you did? And this could, you know, think of it from a global perspective. Somebody playing this game from a different country, they're going to have a vastly different experience than you. So I think what we tried to really do is focus in on the human connection and the human aspect and relation of a lot of these cards, where anybody can really kind of catch on to them and feel that they relate to it to some extent.
I'm going to sit and say, as I'm blanking in the moment, did we change it to trip or was that the one we changed to gathering?
Gathering, I think.
Family gathering. Okay. So it could lend itself to like a Christmas morning or family
club. Yeah, so we took this idea of vacation and, you know, family coming together and doing something, but what's the more broader version of that. So it got, the card got changed to what was your favorite family gathering growing up, because that way it then opens it up to, you know, holidays or a cookout or a vacation, if that's what it is. Or maybe it's just like a trip that you all took to Dairy Queen one time that really sticks out in your mind as being special. So, you know, opening it up to, like Rob said, as many experiences as you can with every single card.
We talk a lot about in tabletop board gaming specific, or tabletop card gaming, or niche tabletop gaming, the instructional design, and how it is horrid. And there are games that are dated that are phenomenal to play, but the rules are just antiquated or never updated. And the number one thing that a lot of people say online and in gaming communities is like, I love game designing, it's a process, but it's like, I hate creating the freaking the rules, you know? And then I know a lot of, there's even a kind of a side booming industry, which is there are a lot of YouTube channels that will teach people how to play a game in 5 minutes, and they will, and they, their whole channel's that, you know? And what I would like to say is I would like to compliment it's kind of a fun story, not just on your print designs, because it's simple, just to fold, easy, you know, but then also your own video that you put right on your website that teaches people how to play it. And I know that touches maybe marketing a little bit, but I'm just, anything you can tell us about your experience with the instructional design part or teaching people how to play it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm probably the odd man out that I love the rules. I'm the friend who in every game, I'm the friend who reads the rules ahead of time and then teaches it to everyone when we try to sit down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's me. You know, I have friends who we did the entirety of Gloomhaven, which took maybe 3 years total to get through all of it.
Wow.
Yeah, it took us a long time, but four of us powered through, we did it all. But, you know, I'm the person who sat there and read the 50-page rule book front to back, went online and did the quizzes to make sure I understood the rules correctly so then I could teach it to other people. So actually sitting down to write rules for this was not a challenge.
A lot of people find it very difficult, and then when they, a lot of metrics that a lot of tabletop gamers use is like, hey, we're going to do the blind play testing, when we can send it and shut up and not say anything, and someone else can play it and get it successfully, and if they encounter a problem, they can find the answer in the rules. What was your experience like with that? Was there drafts, or was it just pretty easy? Or
yeah, there are definitely drafts, and it went through changes. We pretty much, with all of our playtesting, as soon as we had rules fully written down, we kind of, which, you know, we started playtesting in March, April 2020, and I would say probably by July 2020, we were kind of sitting back and just kind of handing the rules to them, letting them read through it in the moment, kind of figure it out themselves, and we would be there to kind of step in if need be, but we allowed them to kind of troubleshoot themselves, and then we could look back and go, well, where did they catch up? What did they not quite understand? What could be clearer? And kind of just, you know, hitting in through that. We actually got a lot of our first year, we were doing first exposure playtest at Gen Con when they were doing it all digital in 2020. And we got a lot of really, really great feedback from that. The note card came out of that experience there, just as a, you know, the X card in tabletop gaming. It's pretty much just based off of that. And we got that from our playtesters at Gen Con, who were like, hey, this is a really great thing that exists in this. Have you thought about it? And we went, yeah, let's do it. This is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what comes out of Pop House. And I think I was excited to see more, and I think our listeners will too. And so how do people get connected to you, find out more, follow, join your community, or how do they get the game? Anything you want to share?
Of course. So we are at this moment available nationwide in the US at Target. So you can head to your local Target, pick up the game, sitting there nice pretty on the shelf with all those other adult party games. And We are planning in a great celebration for the fact that we are now there. At Gen Con this year, anyone who is attending, we are doing a live playthrough with six of your favorite gaming influencers. And the event is going to be hosted by Mo Hart from RuPaul's Drag Race and Amazon Music's The Walk-In. Cool. So we're getting some nice little LGBTQIA plus love at Gen Con this year. It's going to be an amazing time. If you're unable to attend, it's going to be streaming on Gen Con's Twitch channel. So you'll be able to tune in live and play along with everybody.
I was just gonna comment really quick and say Michael almost spit out his drink when you said Mo Hart, which was my favorite part of this entire recording.
Michael loves
RuPaul Drag Race. Yes. I only watch Drag the All Stars, so I don't watch the normal seasons. So
I watch the All Stars too. I love our Queen of Queens, Jinx Monsoon, but like Monique Hart, well now it's Mo Hart, right? Like, is just so like, oh man, she's. I don't know how to say anything for like a podcast.
He's in awe.
Very sassy, very crass. Like I'm a fan. So I think that's kind of amazing. Such a flex that y'all are ended up in Target. Target has kind of established a really kind of like nice like game collection. You can find some.
Yeah,
like really-
their Lego collection and their board game collection is amazing.
Yeah, man. So like, congrats. That's huge.
I feel like. What our secret sauce to all of this, if I may, because it's truly been like, yes, we view this, you know, it's a very fun game. It's an amazing experience in a box. And that is what the game is. Yeah. That is what it's kind of a long story is. But I feel like what we bring to this is such an entrepreneurial spirit where we are so driven to see the success of Pop House Collective as a business and as a game publishing company. It's really us putting our lives on the line, kind of our integrity and our business prowess to see how can we grow this and how can we scale it and how can we do it in this current state of the world, right? People are hyper obsessed with social media. People are less connected than they've ever been face to face and more digitally than ever. How do you break through that noise and really bring something to these people to enjoy and experience? So it's kind of a fun story. It's a really great game that gets everyone around the table to open up and start sharing different experiences about their lives. We like to say it's a strategic storytelling game that lays all your cards on the table. And ultimately, it's just a really great way to get to know the folks that you're playing with on a deeper level. And I think it kind of brings a different je ne sais quoi, if you will, to the party game category that I don't think other games have been able to touch.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Alex.
And my name is Diana.
And we are Two-Fifths of Critically Stupid, a comedy Dungeons & Dragons podcast with new episodes every Friday on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If I had to pick, I'd probably say my favorite NPC in the show is Sean the Gorilla, who I decided in the moment wears pants, a waistcoat, and spectacles. Diana, who's your favorite NPC in the show?
My favorite character is Captain Davelstar Song because... in my head, y'all, he's fine AF and makes me feel a certain way.
If you'd like to experience Diana red-faced and sweaty in real time, catch us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you enjoy that sweet, sweet content. You can catch updates on our Twitter at CritStupid.
Come watch me glisten.
I love that this is going to be audio only. So listener, you're going to have to take my word on it. She's real good looking.
We'd like to finish the episode with a game that we call D12. All this is just a bunch of quick questions, but we're going to roll some dice just to figure it out. There are three of you. Answer off the cuff. Just give it 30 seconds. If you want to think very deeply about it, by all means. What game should everyone play at least once?
Ooh, fun. Okay, honestly, I think this is true to the type of games that I enjoy. I think everybody should try, if you've never played it, you should try and play the game Spot It. It is so simple, but it's a child. If you grew up and you loved playing I Spy or Where's Waldo, this game is a fever dream for you. It's just really hyper competitive. It moves very fast. You and your friends are just moving quickly, trying to identify little symbols on cards. And I think it's one of those games that does a really great job at raising your blood pressure in a really fun way and making you really hyper competitive in this 60 second or less finite piece of time. And I think that is gold. If you can get somebody to experience and feel that emotionally so quickly, you're on to something. And I think that game, as simple as it is, children can play it. It's not overly complex. I played it at the holidays with family, and I think I've had just so much fun with it. We've done elimination rounds to raise the stakes. It's very modifiable. I think that's just a damn good, very simple game.
Awesome. What a plug. Joe. Paragon or Renegade, do you usually play the good guy or do you play the bad guy?
Well, I'm going to have to admit my ignorance on this one, and I can pass that reference off onto Josh.
I am always the good guy to the altruistic of, in my fantasy world, everyone is happy all the time and has gotten everything they've ever wanted in their entire lives. So I will, to the detriment of myself, do everything in my power to help every single person.
Until Josh is the villain in a game, and then you've never seen anybody backstab you so quickly with very strategic bad advice.
We used to play a lot of Betrayal at House on the Hill. To the end of the day, to the answer that what game should everyone play? That's my answer for that. But yeah, I'm a ruthless traitor.
Oh, very ruthless. I beat Josh exactly once in that game, and it was the ultimate high of my life.
That game is pretty hard to win.
Right? Yeah, it's got a pretty high.
Yeah, the best is how long can you survive until the weird shark eats you or whatever the variation is.
Zombie, witch, mummy, or whatever.
Oh my god. Joe, what game is your guilty pleasure?
Don't love the title, but I think it's Secret Hitler. We play it a lot in our friend group, and it really is fun in the fact that it's playful deception, and you're all trying to play you're the good guy, you're the best, and you're for everyone, and you're so happy when a liberal policy gets passed. But that game is great when you're a fascist and you are trying to overthrow the other party, and you're deceiving your partners. I've witnessed on the brink of many divorces happening over this game, where people are pleading with their partners, being like, yeah, I'm a liberal, trust me, just vote for me, it's okay. And then they turn out to be Hitler. Oh, I love it so much because I just love watching it. And then also, I'm pretty good at setting up friends to take the fall, especially my more innocent friends. When I play a fascist card and I'm like, well, you gave me no choice. This is all your fault. And then everybody thinks they're a fascist. That's the answer.
There's something archetypical there about the bookkeeper being the person. It wasn't me. Check the books. I didn't cut the books. No.
The books are fascist.
Right. I don't know what to tell you. This is obviously a setup.
Robert, this one's for you. Fail your last death save, which in Dungeons & Dragons, you're going out. There's no coming back. What are your final words?
How explicit can this be?
We can use profanity on our podcast. It's fine.
No, I don't know if I want to lead with that, but I have a really great one. What would my final words be? Take a good look.
I love it. Okay.
This is the last you're ever gonna see of these.
Josh, a theater of the mind or maps and miniatures?
Ooh. I'm gonna go maps and miniatures. I like, you know, I appreciate the theater of the mind, but I think I'm a visual guy as someone who is currently obsessed with all things Haven, of Gloomhaven, Frosthaven, all that jazz. Yeah. Maps and miniatures, all the way, baby.
Joe, what is your favorite card game?
You know, recently, my partner's from Michigan, and this seems to be a regional game there. It's probably more wider than that, but I think right now my favorite card game, because of the simplicity, it is Skippo. It's so simple. You're just counting your cards to 12, and you know there's kind of a board that's going along with it. But we have a lot of fun playing that game.
Robert and I were both thinking, because he said Michigan, we were like, Euchre. And I was like, this is such a great game.
I do love Euchre, but that's not like I don't know. There's more to it. Like, it's not so simple, even though the dynamics of the game are simple. There's more to it there.
Totally. Robert. Right? Like, sorry, I've got...
I was like,
oh, no. Like, I lost my order. What is your genre? Alternate history, fantasy, cyberpunk, goth, horror?
Ooh, when it comes to drag, I love horror drag. Like, I'm a big fan of...
Oh, like Dracula?
Dracula, yes.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that. Like, give me, like, Sigourney Beaver. Give me Saints. Give me, like, all those folks. I love that. Like, Coco Kane.
Dolly is, I think.
Yeah, Dolly. Got to see them live last year. That was fun.
Wow, really? Wow.
Yeah, they came to Chicago, the Brulé Brothers Dracula tour. Another plug, Dracula.
I'd love to see it. Let's get the Queens Brulé to Brothers them. Love, kind of a fun story.
I know, right?
So what I'm hearing is your genre is horror, drag horror? Or?
Absolutely. Well, okay, yeah. I mean, I did drag like 3 years, oh God, it was before the pandemic. I did it for this like charity kickball lip sync competition. And my inspiration was the girl at the end of Grease when she's finally like the biker bitch and she's wearing like the black leather and she's like really confident and she's no longer like the good girl, right? So I was like full black leather. I bought on Etsy this like bedazzled silver eye patch that a woman in Germany made. So I was on a stage, like, twirling and dancing with one eye, like, visible. But, like, it was very punk rock. It was very horror. And I feel like that is my genre.
Sure. Having seen this performance live, there was also, like, flags involved at one point. And it became, like, Great Gardens Cannons. With Little Edie. Oh, that's what it was. Yes. But, like, where she's, like, dancing and trolling around. Like, I was getting Little Edie vibes from that, from Great Gardens, which... Love the movie. And Rob is just as crazy, so it works.
It was great.
Oh my God, I love it. All right, Josh, I think this one is yours.
All right.
Favorite game villain and favorite game hero?
Ooh.
It's like, you dig it.
I always feel good, like, when Josh is like, good question.
Yeah, I know. I like it because it's making me
It's think. Very validating, right?
I know. This may be a little niche, but it's probably popular enough at this point. I play Final Fantasy 14 every single week with a group of friends. I have a raiding group. And the not most recent expansion, but the last one, had Emmett Selk, who anyone who is listening is familiar, is the most like perfect, troubled villain, was good intentioned, became a villain, and then has an arc to becoming a hero again. And it's just, it's beautiful, y'all. It's, he's just perfect in every way. And probably anyone who plays that game will agree with me.
That's, it's a good answer for both questions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, he can be both. He is, he's both.
Joe, I think this one's for you. Create some enemies. What is the most overrated game?
I don't know. I love all the games I play. Let's think about this. Although I have one in it, and I'm going to create enemies on this call right now, just based on previous conversation. I can feel it. I'm going to receive hate mail from you all. I think the most overrated game for me is Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill, because every time I'm the spook or whatever, I don't know what to do. The directions aren't clear enough for me, which is like, I just can't, I can't figure it out. I figured it out one time, and we played for years. Every, like, Josh and I lived in the same building. They, like, people would just pile into my apartment. We'd play games, and this game would always get brought up. I could never figure it out, except for once. It
we
was
played
a
the Legacy game
me.
Together, too, so he has played this a lot.
I love the idea that it's, like, hard to figure out, even though they give, like, the spook the an entire instruction booklet, you know?
Mm-hmm. I am probably the smartest dumb person you will ever meet.
Well, they're so reliant on me explaining the rules to them. So when I'm not explaining the rules because they're not on my team anymore, it just goes downhill.
Hilarious. Robert. Most underrated game.
Ooh. Let's see. Most underrated game. I'm going to say it. I'm just going to say it. I don't know if anyone's going to like it, but I'm just going to say it. I think the most underrated game, honestly, is the reality television show Big Brother. I think it is the epitome of, like, social strategy with physical competition, with, like, deduction, and you can be, like, sleuthy. If I have one dream in life, I would love nothing more than to be on Big Brother someday, because I think that show would be such a wild ride, and I would love to just, like, try a hand at trying to, like, you know, shake your way all the way through to the end. And it's just, like, you're telling somebody one thing while you're telling somebody another, and you're building trust. It's just, like, a really incredible, like, 3-month experience that I think... Yes, I feel like you probably wanted, like, a gaming answer, but I truly feel like
it is a game. It is a game. We discussed LARPing, and we discussed, like, there are single role playing game journaling games. We talked with geocaching, like, people want Armored Combat League. I mean, so I think reality television competition gaming is definitely a genre. So.
And I feel like I would, like, win, like, Love Island. Like, I feel like there's a whole, like, strategy there. Like, other than, like, short of just being, like, an Adonis, right? Like, but, like, if I could get past that part, like, I love the idea of, like, winning this stuff.
I feel it. I think it would just be a very wild ride, and I could see it being a lot of fun. And I just really love games, and I think that would be, like, the ultimate test of a game is, like, how are you, like, physically able to do this trapped in a house with, like, 14 people for 3 months? That'd be wild.
You guys would, like a whole new, like, card game would emerge out of it.
I know.
Josh. What is your D&D alignment?
Ooh.
He said ooh.
I'm going to go for... Or just like everyone to know that my husband from the Cal server is lawful good. I think I put myself more lawful neutral. No. Ugh. It's hard. Yeah, I'm going to put myself at lawful neutral. No, neutral good. Not lawful good, neutral good, because Yeah, neutral good. I am good for goodness' sake, and believe in doing what needs to be done that's right for the sake of the fact that it is the right thing, whether or not it's necessarily the lawful thing to do.
We have a guest this season who...
We get a lot of neutral evil. So a lot of people are neutral evil. Yeah,
we had a guest this season who made a case for evil and is like, hey, you know, most people are evil and we should just be okay with that. More games for evil people, you know? Last and not least, Joe, I think this is for you. In your experience, the most... usable game, the game with the best player experience.
There is a pretty well-known game out there called Monikers, and every time I play that, I do have so much fun. Like, it's just an hour of people making a fool of themselves while they're playing this game and drawing different cards, and like, you're just laughing and having a good time. Like, that to me is such a good user experience. Like, it's so positive, and like, I always feel better about the people I'm playing with after I play a round of that.
Solid answer. Nice.
And shout out to CMYK Games, who are also local Chicago boys.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
What you've got, 12 questions gotta be quick. Can you handle it? Can you stick? D12, D12, roll the dice, answer well. D12, D12, will you triumph or fail?
This season, we really promise we're going, Design Thinking Games is going to be more active on various social media. We understand as aged Gen Xers / millennials, elder millennials, that like, yo.
Wait, I'm firmly rooted in Zennial. I am a Zennial. So I am right between Gen X and Millennial.
Okay. As a Zennial and a Millennial Elder, we are we acknowledge that, look, like, our social media game for the last two seasons hasn't been on point. But this season, you're missing out if you're not following Design Thinking Games on the three T's, TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter. Probably in that order, as Twitter is a dumpster fire. Well, on TikTok, you can actually see Ben shooting some like excellent, like just like footage of some like of the really cool and interesting games we're playing. As you know, we look at games clinically and deconstruct them to the point of no longer being enjoyable, but that makes for some really good footage. The other thing you'll find there are like this kind of like network of amazing indie designers who we are interviewing, some of whom, or we're interviewing on this show for the season, and we're all going to be engaging there. We'd love for it. If you are into user experience, if you're into the player experience, if you're into the craft of game design, if you're into us, Design Thinking Games.
Previously on Design Thinking LARPing.
Are we LARPers?
Now you understand.
I think we are. Yeah, this isn't right. We have to stop. LARPers are gamers too. Stop, everyone, stop.
Him, end this chaos.
Design Thinking LARPing is a story about heroism. The script is written by a poorly trained AI. And it is performed by your poorly trained heroes. Enjoy!
Listen up, LARPers. We're not so different from each other. We all love to play and immerse ourselves in different worlds, whether it's through video games or live-action roleplay. We've been fighting against each other when we should be fighting for each other.
We should be uniting and embracing our differences.
We can learn from each other. Gamers can teach LARPers about strategy and teamwork, while LARPers can teach gamers about storytelling and improvisation.
So let's stop this war and start working together. Who's with us?
Rapid Protobot is in. Are you in? Now, let's get back to what we love doing. Playing games.
And let's hope that we don't have to metagame our way out of the situation like this again.
Hi, it's me, the one robed in the darkest night. I'm sorry about all of that, but I still have a question. So, can we use Rapid Protobot to help make us cool?
Thank you, truly, from our hearts, for listening to Design Thinking LARPing, a story about togetherness, imagination, and the love of a little protobot who brought all of us together. If you enjoyed yourself, please leave a kind review and tell friends. The story will continue if you want it to.
Thank you for listening and connecting with Design Thinking Games on TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter. You can also check out designthinkinggames.com to request topics, ask questions, or see what else is going on. Until next time, game on. Any final thoughts for our listeners, Rapid Protobot?
Destroy. Destroy.